Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer, WNYC, and three decades into the HIV/AIDS epidemic, the disease continues to surprise and confound. These days, people are living long lives with HIV, but new research suggests they are getting old faster. So joining us now to talk about AIDS and aging is David France, contributing editor at New York Magazine. His story is in the November 9th issue. David, welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks for having me.
And I guess part of your thesis is that people who are actually middle age are expressing geriatric symptoms if they have HIV, correct?
That's exactly the finding, that people are aging much quicker, and that although the average age is for people with HIV is still under 50, clinically they're looking more like they're in their 80s.
Clinically, you're talking about people in the 50s looking like they're in their 80s. What does that mean? The first thing that comes to mind is wrinkles, but obviously you mean more than that.
it's really more about kind of systems. It's bone density issues, and men typically don't have osteoporosis and osteopenia in any large numbers, although men with HIV do in significant numbers, something like 60%. It's cancers that are typically associated with late in life issues, cardiovascular disease that is it's several times the normal rate for people in their 40s and 50s. So it's really covering a whole range of clinical presentations. And what's confusing to people who are just now beginning to describe it is what causes it. Is it caused by HIV itself? Is it caused by the medications? And that still hasn't been kind of unknit.
You tell the stories of people who've been living with HIV for decades, who've had successful post-diagnosis careers, and now they're losing their ability to think. Can you tell us, for example, about Donald, the neuroscientist whose partner is also HIV positive?
That was a very sad case, and unfortunately not entirely uncommon, of two men, both HIV positive for 22 years, who took separate courses through the disease. One is relatively well on his HIV medication, and the other, although he's responded well to medication, has not been able to fend off many clinical problems. And the most significant for him these days is neurocognitive impairment, which is something we now know is affecting over 50% of people living with HIV. In his case, he has suffered some serious brain damage, and it's believed that it was caused by the HIV itself. Brain damage so significant that he has that he's not at all the same person he was, you know, just 6 months ago, and is literally incapable of the kind of work that he had done in the past, which is neuroscientific research. And it's not really clear what he is capable of doing for work these
days.
So
he can't even remember what day it is or what year it is, you wrote.
Absolutely.
You were saying off the air that you might like to hear from clinicians, from doctors, and I want to put out that call because one of the reasons that David France wrote this article in New York Magazine is that he's not seeing what he calls a geriatric AIDS practice or a field of HIV geriatric medicine, really for people who are what we usually call middle age, developing. So I wonder if any doctors who have HIV-oriented practices feel like you are developing something that is a specialty to deal with HIV-positive New Yorkers or anyone else showing these kinds of symptoms and these kinds of diseases. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And let's say anyone else over 50 on aging with AIDS, 212-433-9692, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692 for David France, contributing editor at New York Magazine. Who are the clinicians who you're looking for, who you think may not exist?
Well, I think the biggest issue facing and the biggest kind of across-the-board issue now being faced by people with long-term HIV is neurocognitive and neuromotor skills issues. And when I speak to HIV neurologists, across the board, they tell me that they have that they wish that frontline AIDS docs were more aware of this possibility and would be more, therefore more responsive to patients as they come in and maybe make more referrals. There, right now, there's no treatment being investigated for these neurocognitive and neuromotor issues. And part of the problem for that is that we see only in these kind of cohort studies. We're just counting heads now. No one has yet begun a kind of a study of what the problem is and how we might be able to start treating it.
And since you are just counting heads now, how do you know the bone loss, the impaired memory, are a result of HIV and not some other underlying illness? Many people with HIV/AIDS, particularly now, have substance abuse histories, for example. Maybe it's a subset of the HIV population that's really them.
It could be for many of these, probably not for the bone loss issue, because bone loss is so clearly linked to the toxicities in the drugs. But there are some larger questions even about that that are not understood. We now know that something like 92% of all people with HIV have a vitamin D deficiency, and it's unclear whether or not that is contributing to the bone loss issue or how it's related to that and even what's causing it.
Tracy in East Harlem, you're on WNYC. Hi, Tracy.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
I'm a clinical psychologist and have done research looking at medications that are hoping to slow the cognitive decline associated with schizophrenia. And I'm wondering if there's research going on looking at similar drugs to slow down the neurocognitive decline that you're talking about in patients with HIV. Kind of medications that might be similar to something like Aricept or other meds that have been used for dementia.
Unfortunately, I know of no study that's been financed by either a pharmaceutical company, the NIH, or anywhere else that's looking into that. We know that some clinicians are experimenting with some anti-inflammatory medications and on the assumption that if you treat the inflammation, you might be able to stabilize the decline in order to then determine whether or not, say, for example, a change in antiretroviral drugs might have a better reach across the blood-brain barrier for any HIV activity in the brain.
Mm-hmm. That seems like an area that needs to be looked at. I missed the beginning of this segment, but I was wondering if you've talked at all about the research going on at Mount Sinai when they do a lot of postmortem analysis of the brain. In patients with HIV.
We haven't mentioned that yet, but there is the HIV Brain Bank at Mount Sinai, and they have enrolled, if you will, some 250 brains of people who have died of HIV. And again, it's observational. They're not working on medications that they're beyond that
stage.
It's too late for that, yeah. But what they've determined there is that they have pervasive inflammation in the brains of people who have classified as cognitively impaired before death, and that's the biggest and most reliable finding is inflammation. Now, what causes that? We still don't know. And I mentioned HIV medications. We do know that some are better than others at reaching the virus in the central nervous system.
Tracy, thank you for your call and your concern about this. Here is somebody you profiled in the article calling in. So for people who have read the article, this is Russell. Russell, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi.
Hey, Russell.
Actually, I wasn't profiled. My photograph was in the issue.
Okay, your photograph.
So I guess I got a little blurb there anyway. I was telling your profiler that I think of my father at age 56, and he was a robust, powerful man. And I think of myself at this age, and I have trouble making the bed in the morning. Fatigue is just absolutely debilitating.
Not uncommon. And thanks for your call, Russell.
And Russell, even the picture, that's enough to give to your publicist.
Thanks
for calling.
Thank you very much.
But on the other hand, we have Richard in Brooklyn calling in. Richard, you're on WNYC.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Yes. I've been diagnosed for about 15 years. I'm 68 years old. I've been diagnosed for 15 years, and I think, have been probably living with HIV for 25. I'm sorry, are you there?
Yes, and so okay. You're calling to say, here you are, 68, and, 25 years HIV positive. You're not cognitively impaired. You're not falling apart.
No, not that I can see, no. Right now, I'm learning French for the first time. It's really sort of taking more than it ever has. And I do make my bed. I do work in the garden. I'm active. I take Pilates, et cetera.
Right. So I'm so glad you called so that people don't stereotype older people with HIV as obviously or presumably neurologically impaired or whatever. But, of course, it's a matter of the rates at which these things happen to people compared to others.
It's also important to break down that figure. The figure is 52 or 53% of people living with HIV have neurological issues. But that includes very, very minor ones that sometimes, according to the researchers I spoke to, even the patients don't really identify as being a problem in their day-to-day life. When you add to that things like the fatigue that Russell was talking about, which is an aspect of frailty and other kind of measurements of one's vitality, then you start seeing the 1-2 punch of these accumulated problems.
And we'll give the last word to a listener in Palos Verdes, California, named Gerald, who wrote on our webpage, "People are staying alive who would have died but a decade earlier. Though, on the other hand, a certain level of discontent and even ingratitude may be necessary for any sort of progress." So that's
good
the
point.
Last word on that. David France wrote about aging with AIDS in New York Magazine, where he's a contributing editor. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Now we're going to get to that beautiful slideshow of maps as art that you can see on our webpage at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show, and we'll talk to the author of the book, The Map as Art, coming right up.